And Joy, finally, we just have 30 seconds, but if a Bill of Rights is put in place with the stipulations that you outlined, do you see any benefits of artificial intelligence?
Oh, absolutely. So if we can have ethical AI systems that do help us, for example, with medical breakthroughs, I think that is something that is worth developing. So I am not opposed to beneficial uses of AI, but we don't have to build it in a harmful way. We can enjoy the promise while mitigating the perils.
Joy Bulamwini, we want to thank you so much for being with us, computer scientist, coding expert, founder of the Algorithmic Justice League. To see all our interviews on artificial intelligence, you can go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Gesder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Teresena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Malkoff, Tamari Astudio.
You are tuned into KBO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Multnomah County files suit against Exxon and other big oil companies trying to make them pay for heat dome damage. The Oregon Health Authority could soon help voter registration reach more people throughout the state. And Oregon's U.S. senators push for equality for the LGBTQ plus community and on abortion rights. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, June 22nd, 2023. I'm Annette Newell. Thank you so much for joining us. Multnomah County has filed a lawsuit against several of the largest fossil fuel and coal-producing corporations. The suit seeks to hold the companies responsible for the damage from the 2021 Pacific Northwest heat dome. The county claims that carbon pollution from the fossil fuel products was a substantial factor in causing and exacerbating the heat dome. The suit filed in Oregon Circuit Court in Multnomah County names companies including ExxonMobil, Shell, Chevron, BP, and ConocoPhillips. The county's lawsuit seeks $50 million in actual damages and $1.5 billion in future damages. Firefighters from western states, including Oregon and Montana, are joining Canadian crews in the province of Alberta, helping crews battle flames in a record wildfire season there. Mark Moran reports.
Montana has dispatched emergency crews to help fight raging wildfires north of its border under an agreement that allows northern U.S. states and southern Canadian provinces to work together to battle wildland blazes. It's the first time this season the Northwest Compact has been used, but there is precedent for Canadian crews doing the same for the U.S. The agreement enables U.S. states, Canadian provinces, and territories to share technology and resources to address wildfires across international borders. The compact has been in place for 5 years, and this is the third time Montana has dispatched firefighters to Canada, and the first time this year. Corey Kalnan with the Montana Department of Natural Resources Fire Protection Bureau says the state has sent about 24 hand crews to help.
Hand crews are typically assigned directly to fire line operations and fire perimeter control. So the crew will be digging what they call fire guards in Canada, establishing pumps and hose lays, and really trying to limit the fire's spread.
The crews have been sent to Alberta, which shares a border with Montana. Kalnan says through the compact, Canada has sent resources to Montana during active local wildfire seasons, and the state sees this as fulfilling the compact and returning a favor. Kalnan says the Montana firefighters will get some training when they arrive in Alberta, since terminology can differ between U.S. and Canadian fire crews. He adds different geography, climate, and terrain create a varied approach to fighting the flames.
Fuel types in Canada are very different than what we're used to here in Montana. Just being aware of how things work and operate there, when you move north in latitude, things are much different up there and require just a little bit of a different tactic and approach, but flames are flames.
The Northwest Compact has been in operation since 2018. I'm Mark Moran.
The right to vote could get more inclusive in Oregon. About 2 million Oregonians voted in the 2022 election. Now, Oregon wants to add its state health authority as an agency that can help people to register to vote. As Eric Tegedov reports, it already has a system of automatic voter registration running through the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Oregon makes it easy to register to vote. A bill in Salem is looking to make it even easier. Oregon has a motor voter system of automatic registration that registers voters and keeps election rolls current through the Department of Motor Vehicles. House Bill 2107 would add another agency to automatically register and update voter information, the Oregon Health Authority. Head of Common Cause Oregon, Kate Titus, says it could aid thousands of unregistered voters.
By having one more agency that's working to keep eligible Oregonians registered to vote, it helps close that gap of people who are not registered and don't have the option then to vote.
Titus says thanks to mail-in voting, Oregon already has a high participation rate in elections, and at 62% had the nation's highest voter turnout in the 2022 midterms. HB 2107 has passed the House and is in the Senate as the session winds down this week. Titus says Oregon has been on the forefront of improving election participation.
Oregon has pioneered the country's first modernized voter registration system, which makes registration more convenient and accurate and secure, and has ultimately more than quadrupled Oregon's voter registration numbers and diversified who's included in the rolls.
Titus notes that some states have created barriers to voting in recent years. While it's important to ensure that voter rolls are accurate and secure, she says it's best for democracy when the most people possible can vote.
If we want elections in every state in our country to fully reflect the will of the people, then every eligible voter who wants to participate should have easy access to register and vote.
Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
An Oregon U.S. senator led the effort to announce legislation aimed at ending discrimination towards the LGBTQ+ community. Jeff Merkley led a group of senators and members of Congress announcing their support for a federal Equality Act.
Welcome, everyone, to the 2023 introduction of the Equality Act. I'm so pleased to be here with my colleagues from both sides of the Capitol and have so much appreciation for the organizations that have worked so hard to collaborate on this bill, really since 2015. And we see this growing support from a growing coalition. We had 17 key organizations assisting in this effort. We have more than 500 businesses endorsing the act. We're going to keep building support. You know, President Lyndon Johnson said that freedom is the right to share fully and equally in American society, the right to be treated in every part of our national life as a person equal in dignity and promise to all others. We are here at this moment when that is not the case in America. As the Human Rights Campaign has declared, we are in a state of emergency, characterized by expanding discrimination and increasing hate crimes. LGBTQ+ Americans, and especially trans youth, are experiencing life-threatening environments. Certainly, our LGBT+ community does not have the freedom to share equally and fully in every dimension of American society. Many live in fear that around the corner could be violence or bigotry or state-sanctioned hate directed at them just for who they are. And this isn't just about discrimination or hate crimes by individuals. State-sanctioned discrimination is spreading across our nation. The Human Rights Campaign has tracked more than 500 anti-LGBTQ+ bills introduced and 75 signed into law, sweeping through state legislatures just in this year, 2023. More than double last year's total, which was already the worst on record. Anti-LGBTQ+ bills aren't just words on paper. They deny life-saving medical care. They deny inclusive education. They deny access to spaces and facilities. This is the most significant contraction of American freedoms and equality in generations. We all go to work and school, we go home, we go shopping. No one should have to keep one's family hidden or pretend to be someone we're not to do those things and engage in American life. It is now the time that we have a National Equality Act. Along with our amazing Senate champions, and a special appreciation to Senators Tammy Baldwin and Cory Booker, who have worked so hard in taking this vision and this effort forward, we have an outstanding House team led by Congressman Mark DeCano, and that we have the support of Democratic leadership in both chambers. We introduced the Equality Act today to tell kids across the country who might feel threatened or scared about who they are and how others react to them, that you are not alone, and that you should have the opportunity to participate in every aspect in our national life. We introduced the Equality Act today to tell our transgender youth we stand with you and we will do all we can to end the prejudice and the discrimination and the bullying so you will have a full opportunity to thrive. The Equality Act adds sexual orientation and gender identity, the longstanding bans on discrimination in employment, education, housing, public accommodations such as restaurants and libraries, financial institutions, and jury duty. It sends the message, particularly the youth of this country, that there is a future for them where they can thrive and live their fullest life. Because, to paraphrase President Johnson, we need to ensure that every American finally shares fully and equally in American society, that all in our LGBT plus, Q plus community are treated as persons equal in dignity, equal in promise to all others.
That's Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. Others announcing their support include Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker Hakeem Jeffries, and many more. It's been 1 year since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, the decision that legalized abortion. Since then, OHSU doctors say rollbacks of abortion protections have increased dangers to patients and physicians and strained health capacity. Since that Dobbs decision, sending the abortion question back to the states, OHSU reports seeing a big increase in people coming from states like Idaho and Texas for medical care when they have life-threatening infections while pregnant. Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden spoke out about the impact of the Dobbs decision.
So it's been a year since the atrocious decision in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. I remember reading the leaked decision in the press early last May and realizing with dread that the court was going to strike down Roe versus Wade. And my first reaction was that the court had set in motion a catastrophe for the health, safety, and privacy of American women. To the horror of the 36 million women living in states that have already banned abortion or are likely to ban access to abortion, unfortunately, my prediction was right. Now, the Supreme Court's decision in Dobbs tossed out a half a century of legal precedent, curtailed the fundamental rights of women, and jeopardized the health and safety of millions across the country. The court defied the American people, who are living with the grim reality that some of the nation's most powerful people are eager to violate their privacy and their basic right to make their own decisions with respect to health care. So the last year has been a nightmare for millions of women in America, and it's been especially felt by those living in the more than 20 states that have passed laws banning or severely restricting access to abortion. The personal stories that you hear if you spend time listening are gut-wrenching. Women in Texas who desperately wanted to be parents, who suffered pregnancy complications, nearly died trying to access life-saving care. Yet they were told, Madam President, they weren't sick enough to get it. Far-right politicians suing healthcare providers for providing care to a 10-year-old who had been raped, Madam President, and pregnant. The cruelty apparently is the point. I'm proud to be from Oregon, where abortion remains legal. We've got some of the most pro-choice laws in the country for those seeking reproductive care. That's because in Oregon, we understand people can make the best decisions for themselves and their families. But even in Oregon, we can't take freedom for granted. Extreme Republicans won't stop until they pass a national ban on abortion. And they're trying. A national 6-week ban was introduced in Congress right after the Dobbs decision came out. and anti-abortion advocates sought out a lone judge in Amarillo, Texas, to ban mifepristone, which is widely and safely used in medication abortions nationwide. The FDA approved this safe and effective medication for dispensation more than 20 years ago. And I organized the first congressional hearings about this drug as a member of the other body in 1990. And this effort was never based on some extreme or some political agenda. It was based on one proposition, that science ought to be making the judgments and not politics. So I came to the Senate floor in February, called on the administration to do everything it could to keep the life-saving medication on the market. And thankfully, the far-right extremists haven't won yet. But as a number of my colleagues have said today, and correctly, not home free as that case moves through the courts. Contrary to what Justice Kavanaugh told us in his concurrence in Dobbs, anti-abortion zealots are not leaving these matters up to the states. Several states are trying to restrict freedom of movement, criminalizing women who travel to other states for an abortion, or even the person who gives them a ride. Think about that. You can't sugarcoat that. They're talking about enacting laws that reach beyond state borders. And that harkens back to some very dark days in our history. This has always been about control. And one speaker after another on our side has said that through the course of the day. This is about politicians inserting themselves in exam rooms and into private decisions about whether and when to start a family. Now, I care about this issue for several reasons. And right at the heart of my concern is Americans' right to privacy. That right to privacy, Madam President, is what makes America, America. And as women grapple with restrictive state laws that threaten their health and take away their privacy, they also face an equally pressing crisis of digital privacy and what we've come to call uterus surveillance. Governments are weaponizing the most personal and private data about women's bodies and health care and using it against them. And I and a number of colleagues on our side have been sounding this alarm for years that location data leached from phone apps is ripe for abuse. In states where extremists have restricted or banned abortion, that goes straight to a five-alarm crisis. We also know that shady data brokers have tracked women to and from Planned Parenthood centers. They have and will sell this information to anybody with a credit card. And in states where abortion is illegal, anything women say or read online can be used against them. Researching birth control online, updating a period tracking app, even just carrying a phone into the doctor's office, you name it, it is potential evidence for the prosecution. Possibilities are frightening, and our laws governing women's sensitive private health data, as we think about what's ahead, we have to recognize those laws have been outdated and weak for decades. And I commend the administration for drawing attention to this issue and being interested in shoring up loopholes in our laws. More has got to be done. We've seen over the past year that Republican state attorney generals and governors are ready and willing to discard women's privacy in their quest to prohibit access to reproductive health care. So this has been a horrific year. And as my colleagues have said on the floor since this morning, we are going to be resolute. All the bills that the group led by Senator Murray and my colleague, President of the Senate, they're common sense. They're common sense, the bills, the package that my colleagues have offered today for unanimous consent. They go a long way towards protecting women and healthcare providers. And I just want my constituents to know, I want my colleagues here in the Senate to know, I'm on the program. I don't think this is a time when we can even take for granted any of these concerns. Not a one. The whole question of access to care, right to privacy, making sure that states' rights really mean states' rights and not tracking people down across the country. These are all priorities that my colleagues have laid out very, very well. And as long as I have the honor to represent Oregon in the United States Senate, I'm going to be working with all of them. And the fact is, as we close, and it seems like we're getting ready to wrap up, I think it's clear that the American people are on the side of my colleagues over here.
That's Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, clear skies, down to 57. Tomorrow's weather, a possibility of afternoon thunderstorms, the high up to 84. Today in history, on this date in 1944, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed the GI Bill, designed to compensate returning members of the armed services for their efforts in World War II. Our quote of the day is from FDR, who said, "We are today laying plans for the return to civilian life of our gallant men and women in the armed services." Republican members of the U.S. House move closer to censuring California Congressman Adam Schiff. The U.S. Supreme Court appears to be ready to make a decision about student debt forgiveness. And a former college swimmer calls for participation restrictions on transgender athletes. For more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2023 Talks.
You flatter me with this falsehood. You, who are the authors of a big lie about the last election, must condemn the truth tellers, and I stand proudly before you.
Democratic California Representative and former House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff spoke on the House floor Wednesday as GOP members cleared the way to censure for leading probes of former President Donald Trump and the January 6th insurrection. Republican Representative Ana Paulina Luna of Florida made a privileged resolution, which facilitates a speedy floor vote. Republican Representative Lauren Boebert of Colorado is pushing for her own privileged resolution to impeach Biden over what some have called the immigration crisis. Boebert also had harsh words for Schiff.
His tombstone should read of his failed career in Congress and should be one word, liar. I yield back.
The Supreme Court is expected to rule soon on President Joe Biden's student debt relief plan. Republican South Dakota Senator John Thune says he hopes the court strikes down what he calls Biden's student debt forgiveness scheme.
I just think that the American people find it offensive to think that they could take the 13% of people in this country who have student loans, take that debt and transfer it to the 87% of people who don't have student loans. And that's what we're doing.
The court must first rule at least one of the challengers, six Republican-led states and two individual borrowers, has the legal standing to bring forward the suit. And if so, rule on the plan itself. Former University of Kentucky swimmer Riley Gaines testified at a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing relating to protecting civil rights for LGBTQ plus Americans. Gaines spoke about her experience competing with transgender swimmer Leah Thomas, as well as having to share the same locker room. Gaines said it wasn't fair.
Defending women's rights is not anti-anyone. Believing in biology is not bigoted. And following the science that there are only two sexes and that there are very real and important differences between the two sexes is not hateful, it's fact.
A new Gallup poll showed 69% of Americans believe transgender athletes should compete in sports with their biological sex. Texas Governor Greg Abbott recently enacted a law requiring college athletes to participate in sports based on the gender on their birth certificate. On Wednesday, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer laid out his legislative framework to regulate artificial intelligence. Schumer said AI could be revolutionary, but echoed the concerns of tech experts who have warned of the possible dangers.
AI could be our most spectacular innovation yet, a force that could ignite a new era of technological advancement, scientific discovery, industrial might. So, we must come up with a plan that encourages, not stifles, innovation.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
The Department of Energy grants more than $77 million to states and tribes for grid updates. Native heavy metal bands rock an indigenous comic and arts festival, and the First Americans Museum wins a big award for a returned objects exhibit. With these stories and more, here's National Native News.
The U.S. Department of Energy recently announced that seven states, three tribal nations, and the District of Columbia were selected as the second cohort to receive more than $77 million in grid resilience state and tribal formula grants. Supported by the infrastructure law, the grants are intended to help modernize the electric grid to reduce impacts of extreme weather and natural disasters, while also ensuring power sector reliability. According to the agency, the funding helps deliver on the Biden administration's goal of ensuring all communities have access to affordable, reliable, 100% clean electricity. The tribes awarded funding for fiscal years 22 and 23 are the Coushatta Tribe of Louisiana, the Mohican Tribe in Connecticut, and the Scotts Valley Band of Pomo Indians in California. Many creatives recently took part in an Indigenous Comic Con festival in Denver. The Mountain West News Bureau's Emma Vander 90 tells us about part of the event, a heavy metal concert.
The opening guitar riff rang out of the Levitt Pavilion speakers just outside Denver. Eager heavy metal fans lined the barrier at the Res Metal concert, cheering on the Arizona native band Merciless Indian Savages. They were among the artists at IACON, an indigenous Comic-Con festival, featuring everything from a futuristic fashion show to a blacklight powwow. The word Aya is from the Lakota language, meaning to change or become. Christina Maldonado Badhand co-founded the new event, and she says the goal was to show people the range of what indigenous art looks like.
We have powwow dancing, and we have a lot of our culture presenting, but we have toys up there. We've got, like, comic books. There's anime stuff. There's horror stuff. Like, it's really broadened.
Most Comic-Cons feature voice actors and celebrities from superhero and sci-fi movies. The Denver event was all about indigeneity and highlighting the breadth of their skills and talents, including heavy metal music.
People think it's nonsense, but we're like spitting some knowledge, you know, that people are unaware of, and metal's like the perfect canvas to do that.
That's Corey Ashley, the vocalist for Merciless Indian Savages. Their songs often reference genocide and oppression inflicted upon indigenous people. One of the songs is titled Kill Man, Save the Indian. It's a twist on the philosophy behind the traumatic Indian boarding schools, enforced for decades by the U.S. government.
Originally, everybody knows, obviously, kill the Indian, save the man. But we're like, you know, that. We want to, like, empower our people, and we want to denounce this way of saying it.
Ruben Dawahoya, the band's bass player, says he wanted to show that indigenous people belong in heavy metal, too.
We're just turning the tides, basically, turning the vice versa around on everybody else, saying that we can't evolve, we can't do things that everybody else can.
For National Native News, I'm Emma Vandenhinde.
The American Association for State and Local History has selected the First Americans Museum in Oklahoma as a recipient of the History and Progress Award, an award of excellence for Winnico, Life of an Object. The History Progress Award is in recognition for achievement in the preservation and interpretation of state and local history. The HIP Award is an additional award for excellence for inspirational, exceptional scholarship, or is entrepreneurial in terms of funding, collaborations, creative problem solving, unusual project design, or inclusiveness. This year, there are 53 national awards honoring people, projects, exhibits, and publications. The First Americans Museum in Oklahoma City focuses on educating the public about the cultures, diversity, history, and contributions of the 39 tribal nations in Oklahoma today. The 175,000-square-foot facility showcases exhibits, live public and education programs, Native-inspired cuisine, and a museum store featuring Native arts. I'm Jill Freitas.
This is Animal Rights Awareness Week, which happens on the third week of June every year. The purpose is to raise awareness and acknowledge the needs and wants of animals. Joe Ullery has the story.
For more than 30 years, the third week of June has been set aside as Animal Rights Awareness Week. It's an ideal time to talk to friends and family about respecting and protecting animals. Lisa Terry sees every day why it is important to remind people to be kind to animals. She runs the Cass County Humane Society in North Central Indiana. And as the state emerges from the pandemic, Terry says sadly, too many owners have surrendered pets.
People who are working from home during COVID, now they're back to the office or back to the factory, and the dog or cat is alone all day, and they come home to maybe a mess or a frustrated animal, and it's not as much fun as it used to be. So that's one reason they're being returned.
Terry says every community plays a crucial role in animal welfare. The Animal Legal Defense Fund ranks Indiana 12th in the nation for state animal protection laws, from including animals in court protective orders to requiring training for humane officers. For individuals and families, choosing to adopt a shelter animal instead of buying from a pet store can make a meaningful impact. Volunteering time or money can also make the difference between your local animal shelter failing or succeeding. Terry says inflation has been a challenge, but her shelter has found creative ways for struggling owners to keep their pets.
The huge rising costs of food, litter, veterinary bills, and some people still not back to work. We try to give from our pet food pantry, kitty litter and dog food and cat food, so that people that can't afford it, we want to give them food and necessary support so they can get through the hard times.
Terry stresses as people observe Animal Rights Awareness Week, it is also important to celebrate the advocates who serve as the voice for animals in state and local policy and enforcement. I'm Joe Ullery.
You're You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, June 22nd, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Michelle Coppola, Eric Tegedoff, Mark Moran, and Joel Ullery. The producer's Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Full Lomith on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth, coming up next.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical comments.